What a perfect crew on a perfect day. Ah, so the heading for this retreat in terms of what I'll be talking about is one continuous mistake. So I'm going to be talking about mistakes. Have any of you, do you remember when you were a child that there was this children's magazine called Highlights? And there was the back cover where it said, can you find, how many mistakes can you find on this page? Do you remember that? So you'd see a guy on skates on a pond, on a liquid pond, somebody with a rubber duck on his, for a hat, or, you know, weird things like that. And as a child, I just thought that was so much fun. I ignored the whole magazine and went straight to the back. You know, oh, let me find the mistakes. So I think we're a little bit like that as human beings, you know, in general, as adults, I should say, that there's a, that it's, it may not be quite so joyful and fun, and yet we seem to be kind of like laser beams headed for either our own mistakes or other people's mistakes. So I thought I'd talk about it a little bit. Dogen, a great Japanese Zen master, came up with this phrase, one continuous mistake. Now, for some people that might be a relief. It's like, oh, all right, well, never mind. For others, it might be incredibly depressing. You know, how are we ever going to get out of this? So I would suggest that we don't have to take either of those positions. In our heritage of Zen, our own founding teacher, Zen Master Sung San, famously said, open mouth, big mistake. Furthermore, as I think was brought up earlier, wanting enlightenment, another big mistake. It's just... it's, you know, it's tough. It's tough for us. Poor human beings. So let's take a look at that on a few different levels. First of all, what does that mean? What does it even mean, mistake? Mistake, missed judgment, a judgment that has been faulty. This is our human root. Any kind of preconceived judgment that we might have about where we're going, what is the right thing to do, this is like Bugs Bunny going off the edge of a cliff with his legs scrambling in midair. We don't know until we're there, really, where we are. We could look out. I mean, Bugs Bunny should have looked. He should have noticed there was a cliff, granted. But there's an awful lot, in fact, entirely, that we don't know. And with all the best intentions, and with all the you know, perverted and packaged ideas that we might bring to a situation, we don't know. We don't know how it will unfold. And so we have these blunders, these mistakes, these errors of judgment. As practitioners of Zen, we see it happening in our own consciousness moment by moment. We see it happening in our own body that kind of is caving in on itself, sleepiness, thinking, or whatever. And body says, mistake, mistake. Straighten up again. So one continuous mistake, open mouth, big mistake, closed mouth, big mistake, wanting enlightenment, big mistake, not wanting enlightenment, big mistake. Gradually, over time, we develop some compassion for our blunders. Not only for our blunders, but for our parents' blunders, our grandparents' blunders, our universe's blunder, going off and exploding like that. Really? What a mess! So we can develop some compassion. Correct, incorrect. There we go again. By developing compassion, we develop love, true love. For true human beings, for true world situations. We become intimate. It all starts here at our center. When we become intimate with our own stuff, our own history and projections into the future and our, you know, bumbling way of getting through life, then we start to see that reflected all around us. There's an odd thing that happens when this compassion grows through our practice, through our maturing. We begin to see the perfection of this as it is. While there may be tremendous, you know, rallying of forces over here to do this, that, and the other, and there are tremendous arguments, you know, being carried out over here for this, that, or the other, this teetering universe finds its balance just as it's losing it again. So it behooves us as practitioners to appreciate our mistakes, our universal mistakes. You know, that there's so much about our political climate that, you know, I think that where we set a course, where any one of us might set a course in terms of ideology, what will make the world better, what will help us, it's based on mistakes to a large degree, some kind of imbalance. And we can appreciate that. We can appreciate that. But as we make a correction, unseen forces, new problems arise. And it just goes on and on like that. So, I'll bring you a koan from this collection. I don't know, well, it's from China, from Yunmen. It's called Split in Two, Torn in Three. Yunmen addressed the assembly, saying, when the robe is split in two, torn in three, where then is the eye of the needle? Pick up the pieces one by one and bring them here to me. On behalf of the audience, Yunmen then said, above, between, below. If any of you feel like taking a stab at that in the interview, I'll ask you, what does it mean? What is all that? But this beginning part, when the robe is split in two and torn in three.
The robe?
The robe, yeah, the robe. Where then is the eye of the needle? So that this is, okay, we're switching to poetry 101 for a moment. And looking at this phrasing, the eye of the needle. Can any of you just sort of offer up what you think that might be referring to?
The center?
Yeah, the essential matter. You know, the essential matter, the core matter. It's used as a metaphor in China really beautifully, I think, in that... you know, the whole function of a needle depends on that hole, the eye of the needle. And it may be gold, the needle itself may be gold or silver or bamboo or something, but it's useless unless it has that hole. So that center, that beginning place of before thinking mind, that's where we begin our work. When the robe is split in two, torn in three, it's a good question to have. Where is that open, spacious place? We are so attracted, again, to the point that I made at the beginning about Highlights magazine. We are so drawn to mistake, to controversy, to error, either in a positive or negative way. We're just like magnets all over it. But this is, in this little story, Jungmann is suggesting that we turn our gaze to this question, where is the I of the needle? Where is the spaciousness? First and foremost. Then it becomes possible to see what's really going on. And once we can see as much as as much as we're capable of, without leaning too far one way or another, then it's possible to see how we can address the situation, how we can find our fitting function. But let's always, and again, this points to the beauty of what we do on retreat, that we take this deliberate time, that we take a good big chunk of time to find that eye of the needle. Settle in. There's such a rush, such a, we're being called to action, action, action by our various, everything. So I think it takes, really a tremendous amount of courage to dial it back, even while we may be torn in two or in three pieces. Because actually, that's just what needs to happen. Step back and find that space. I think one of the greatest compliments that I've ever received was when I was in graduate school at Brown in poetry, and we had to do some wild writing exercises sometimes. I loved it. I loved the, the quirkiness of what we did there. And one exercise was that You know, the graduate student pool was, I think there were 12 of us. So it was a small group. And a visiting poet asked us to pick one person among us and think about it for a minute, and then tell that person what their profession is, not in real life, but in poetic life. Just to say, what is your job? Kind of like, what is your true job? And the person who told me what my job was said that my job was to repair the eye of the needle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. So I think I'm kind of, I'm taking that on. And I have. I mean, that person didn't know anything about my Zen stuff, or, you know, but I think that's our job as Zen students. To repair within ourselves the eye of a needle. So this comes to the repair part of mistakes. While there may be one continuous mistake, and while the mistake is also, you could say, no mistake, but the natural evolution of humanity and the universe, still errors are made, problems arise as a result of mistakes. So how do we fix that mistake? How do we take on the repairs, aside from the first course, which is to repair the eye of the needle, to find our spacious awareness? Have any of you heard of kintsugi? You have, yeah. So kintsugi is, I bet you're all aware of it, maybe not the term, but several hundred years ago in Japan, there developed an art form which was the repair of broken pots. And the repair is done with the pieces glued back together and highlighted with gold. Very fine gold. So have any of you seen those images of like a tea bowl that's been broken and repaired in gold? That's the process of kintsugi. You can look it up sometime, kintsugi. And this practice started with I can't remember, it was some important personage had a very valuable tea bowl, and it was broken, like pots tend to do. Tell me about it. They were going to send it off to China because in China they knew how to do everything the best, apparently, at that time. And so they had a way of stapling broken pots together. Somewhere before that happened, it was decided that, no, they were going to do it a different way. And really not try to either hide the mistake, you know, try to make the repairs so perfect that you couldn't even see where there was breakage, and not to do just some kind of unattractive stapling maneuver, but to appreciate the mistake as a point of beauty. And what is that beauty? But the growth of an object, the change of an object, the growth and change of us as human beings. So, I mean, that's a familiar, I know it's very familiar to all of you. You just carry on and you grow from your mistakes. But I think this is taking it a little bit further, that it's actually a thing of beauty. We might say in Zen of thusness, shimmering thusness. So as you know, as we find our center point in our physical practice, in meditation, maybe lean a little bit this way, lean a little bit that way, stretch our backs, unwind our shoulders, settle into the center point. The whole thing is an expression of that repair, that thusness, that shimmering quality. Again, compassion has a lot to do with that. I think we all genuinely try hard to do the right thing. Even people we couldn't, you know, imaginably agree with on any point at all. We are all broken already. And our repairs are noticeable. We can spot them, especially in other people. We can really spot them. Take this next, not a big step, but take this next step and appreciate some beauty there. Another way of talking about that might be of letting go, sort of opening our hand. That damage done, either to us or to other people, we don't have to keep grasping those pieces, that brokenness. We can let it go, let it be. And we can, you know, there's that phrase that's so common to that we've heard over and over again about forgiveness. That forgiveness is a kind of letting go. Let it be. I think I might, maybe some of you have heard this, but I read a fascinating, fascinating book. It's a collection of answers to a question about a circumstance that happened after, well, towards the end of World War II. The book is called The Sunflower. Have any of you heard of it? It's pretty obscure, so you're forgiven if you haven't. But so there was a man who had been through Auschwitz. A Jewish man who had suffered through Auschwitz. And he found himself towards the end of the war in the hospital, whatever kind of health care facility they had there. And there was an SS guard who was near to dying. And the SS guard called this Auschwitz survivor to him and said, "Can you forgive me?" That's a big one. That's a really big one. And the man, he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Later on in life, he sent a letter to the great thinkers, the great religious leaders around the world. I think the Dalai Lama's in there, the Pope, the, you know, really the big people, and asked them, if you had been there, what would have been the right thing to do? That's a pretty interesting read. It's a pretty interesting read. So while they're, you know, the while the physical act or the verbal act of forgiveness might be difficult, if not impossible, there can be a relaxing place that we can practice of relaxing our grip on the mistake, on the damage done. Relaxing, letting it be, as a way towards aiming in the direction of letting it go. And the end result doesn't, that's not so much the important thing. And it's not so much what's the right or wrong response in that situation. But the practice of first finding that center place, that I, being there, showing up for it wholeheartedly, looking at it. That already is a big part of forgiveness. Because, you know, before we get to that point, we can just be completely swallowed up by our conditioned response, our anger, our fear, whatever. But to be able to see clearly what it is, already more than halfway there. That's the part in this kintsugi process where you assemble the pieces and you see what's there. What's there? How does it go together? How does it fit? Somebody handed you a bag of a broken human being. What do you do with it? You start to engage with it and interact with it. Find how it goes together. Appreciate the beauty of our human form in however pieces it may be, split in two or torn in three. Where is the eye of the needle? Bring them close to you. And get started on the repairs. Sure enough, right behind you, behind us, as you make the repair, something else is dropped. So let's not take this too in such a heavy way. Consider it of just a process of practicing beauty and thusness. And what a joy. How lucky we are. So, thank you for listening.